You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. This is Congressman Steve King, and we're here today with another interesting guest. We're here to welcome Pastor Kerry Gordon of Sioux City to the program. And I've gotten to know Kerry through the years as an individual who's taken forward and taken a leadership position within the Siouxland area, and someone who stepped forward with his life's profession and really the love of his life's profession, which is a pastoral ministry. Leader of the Cornerstone World Outreach Center in Sioux City. Married to Molly, three sons, Solomon, Jonas, and daughter Ella, and also someone who has a tremendous technological background and ability. When I see the things that you put together, the displays and the video and the audio and the way you've used this combination of technology to further the Lord's work, Kerry, I just can't thank you enough for being part of this program, for the service that you are there, and for coming on and having an opportunity for us to get to know you a little better.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
And there have been a lot of dynamic things going on in the world. As we speak here, there's the issue of the hate crimes legislation, which most recently passed off the floor of the House of Representatives. And I know that you brought an opinion to that, and you've been vocal on that issue throughout your ministry. And could you explain to the listeners about your position on that and your concerns about the legislative regulation of what goes on in people's minds when they commit something that is hateful against a person?
Absolutely. You know, the biggest problem is you're elevating behavior to the level of race. And I think one of the issues that I don't like about that, and I've heard this complaint from some African-American pastor friends of mine, is in a way they're really devaluing the kind of suffering that, for example, the African-American community went through in the 60s with real discrimination. Discrimination against somebody concerning something they can't change that's visually noticeable. You know, you can't change what color your skin is or the fact that you're handicapped. You know, that kind of discrimination is wrong, and we need laws to protect people from that. But when it comes to something like homosexuality, which is very private, it's nothing you can visually detect necessarily. It's something that no one would have to know unless, in fact, you're putting it in the public and rubbing it in someone's face. And elevating behavior to the level of race is extremely dangerous. It devalues the suffering of real discrimination that has gone on at high levels with racial and other issues. One thing that I always think about is, where are the slums filled with homosexual people that are suffering economically? In fact, you look at the statistics and you see that most of the homosexual community are middle and upper class. They do very well in business. So it seems like an exaggeration, and I think the real agenda here is to silence religion, because religion is the 6,000-year enemy of homosexual behavior, and that is exactly what this kind of thing is designed to do. It's calculated. It's been done in Sweden 5 years ago. Legislation eerily similar to what just happened today passed in the country of Sweden, and Pastor Ake Green made the horrible mistake of preaching from Romans chapter 1 in his own pulpit in his own church just about a year ago, and he was sentenced to 30 days in jail for committing a hate crime. That is the path that the liberal agenda has set this nation on now. The government has entered a course in direct confrontation with religion in America, and it's not going to be pretty.
And you referenced Romans chapter 1, and this afternoon went to the floor of Congress and referenced George Orwell's 1944 printed version of, or excuse me, it was 1949 was when it was printed, but the book 1984 by George Orwell, and I know it's 57 years old because that happened to have been the year I was born, but George Orwell predicted this as well, and he stated in there that it doesn't matter what overt act you do, that it's thought that we need to control, and if we're going to punish thoughts, then we can control every action simply by punishing thoughts.
Exactly.
And it was such an eerie thing to stand there and read that into the floor, that part of that book into the record, and then make my statements on how we are seeking now to control thought. Orwell predicted it 57 years ago. It didn't come quite as soon as he thought it would. He thought it would be 35 years later, and it turned out to be 57 years later. But I'll make another point, too. You can't control thought, and and you can't punish thought because no one can divine what's in a person's mind.
That's right.
A juror can't do that. But you talked in definition about what I call immutable characteristics, and I reflect upon Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, and I think there were some glorious times during to establish and protect the freedoms of individuals, and all of us who were created in God's image and treated exactly the same in the eyes of the law.
Right.
But in the Civil Rights Act, it says there will be no discrimination based upon race, creed, color, religion, ethnicity, national origin, or sex. And all of those characteristics except religion and creed, which are constitutionally specifically protected, all of
right.
the other characteristics
right.
are immutable. They can be independently verified. They can't be self-alleged. And so I think that's the point that you've made. I'd ask if you could expand upon that, Gary.
Well, absolutely. You know, with 100 years of clinical study looking at the issue of homosexual behavior, the fact remains, now people reject this instantly and say it's not true, but it just happens to be true. All the clinical studies that have ever been provided, looked at by objective, honest scientists, say there is absolutely no proof that anyone is born homosexual. Until that proof exists in the medical world, in the scientific world, the government is overstepping its bounds in more ways than one to try to elevate what clearly is behavior to the level of race, because the fact is, if you're not born that way, there is choice involved. You can change, and the behavior is subject to your own will and decisions.
Well, I just had this question occurred to me, and we were listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're here with Pastor Kerry Gordon of the Cornerstone World Outreach in Sioux City and a number of other endeavors. This occurred to me that, and I just finished saying that you can't punish thought, that government can't punish thought because we can't divine what's in a person's mind or what's in a person's heart. But I'd ask you this theological question, and that is, does God punish thought?
God does deal with thoughts, but he deals with it in the next life. You know, Jesus, one of the major contributions that he made to a culture of Jewish religion, where it was the spirit of the law was violated as often as possible, and the letter of the law was observed without recognizing the spirit of the law. Jesus had a very controversial message by coming into the Jewish community and saying, God looks at your motives far before he looks at the outcropping or the fruit that's born from inside you. Jesus basically said that you could do good things, but if your motive was ulterior and evil and was for some personal gain or some vanity, that you would be judged based on the motive of your actions and not necessarily whether the action was viewed outwardly as being wrong. So God does deal with thoughts, but that's the interesting thing that you're asking. God's the only one that knows our thoughts, Congressman King, and human beings don't have the ability to divine that.
I was hoping you'd make that point, Reverend Gordon, and really, I want to leave that province to God. He's the only one that knows our thoughts. And if I could shift this a little bit, I wanted to ask you about some of the other works that you're involved in, or some of the other endeavors that you're involved in. The projects that you have in front of you. I know that there are a lot of plates that you keep spinning there at Cornerstone, and I'm not appreciative enough of all the things that you and the Gordon family does, but I'm very appreciative of you all together. Would you care to talk about some of those things?
You bet. You know, one of the things that I've been looking at over the last few days is the issue of immigration and what's happening right now with our borders. And I find it fascinating that we're in this debate. I wouldn't take enough time to do it, but you could draw parallels between the liberal kind of thinking that creates an immigration problem with the liberal kind of thinking that has created problems with hate crimes, so on and so forth. But basically, immigration is a serious problem that we have. We recognized that many years ago at Cornerstone, and we saw an overwhelming population of Hispanic people that were entering our community, and they weren't able to speak, read, or write English. And, of course, our first goal, of course, is to reach people with the gospel and tell them about the good news of the Lord Jesus Christ and reach them in their hearts, because that's how you really change someone, is getting to their heart, not by changing their exterior. And we began offering our services translated in different languages, not only to Hispanic people. We also had, at that time, a translator that could give someone wireless headphones and translate our sermon into the Laotian, as well as Spanish. And our first contact with immigrant people in this city was done that way. They wanted to go to church. They didn't know of a place where they could go and understand anything. And So they started coming to ours. And then, you know, as time progressed, our goal was to try to wean them off of those wireless headphones where they could actually interact in our culture and speak our language. So we began offering English classes, and we would teach the Laotian community and the Hispanic community how to speak English. And because not only did we realize that that was going to help them on a personal level, help them succeed and get jobs and provide for their family, we also realized that we're helping America when we do that. Because if you look at history, you know, you've got to understand that no nation can survive the antagonism of two competing cultures and languages vying for power. And we can't afford to have more than one culture in America. We need American culture. We need English-speaking culture. That doesn't mean that we tell people to turn their back on their heritage and the value of where they came from. It just means that we don't promote multiculturalism and diversity at the expense of national unity.
You know, I look back on some years ago and when I was in the Iowa Senate and promoting English as the official language in a fairly aggressive way, and I was constantly confronted by what I would call some of the minority of the most liberal and militant Latinos that could arrive there in Des Moines. And in order to understand this better, and most of the members of the state legislature would go home on take off on a Thursday night, and I stayed on many of the Fridays. I called it my day to meet with the bureaucrats, but I went instead the opposite way from Des Moines. Instead of going home, I went to Marshalltown on a Friday night to a service there that was a Spanish service for Hispanics in the Baptist Church there in Marshalltown. And I walked in there, and everything was in Spanish, but they had the screen up like you have, and I could follow along and sing along even though I didn't understand the language. And there was that sense, that feeling of walking into the house of the Lord, that sense of belonging, that sense of oneness. And from that and from the other services that I've been to in foreign countries as well, I can see, and I want to tell you that I appreciate that you have taken your ministry and expanded that to be inclusive and at the same time promote the unity of Americanism.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
And that tone that comes from that is just so valuable if anyone hasn't experienced that. How do you view the proposal for amnesty that's been coming then from the, I'll say, the administration and strongly from the Senate and to some degree here from the House? What do you think that does to us or for us, Reverend Gordon?
Oh, boy. The issue of amnesty, you know, I look at everything through a biblical view because that's my job. It's my life work. And I have to base everything on this underpinning. Laws that are not enforced and do not have proper consequences are really not laws at all. They're nothing more than a mere suggestion. And what God has given man throughout history to preserve the nations that God has given men to have and enjoy, the book of Acts says that God drew the borders of every nation with his finger, and it was God's idea that we have borders. It was God's idea that we have laws. God didn't give us laws so that we could be abusive to one another. In fact, the institution of law, or the existence of law, is to protect and to keep people safe. And the only way that we're going to preserve our own children and keep our own families safe is if we have real laws that are enforceable with real consequences. In principle, when you begin to undermine what a law is for, and that is to stop bad people from doing bad things to good people, you begin to undermine that and lessen its effect by creating at least the illusion that it's just a suggestion. You are on a slippery slope, and you can go to the next law and the next law and the next law after that, and you begin to have lawlessness, and that's what endangers us right now with this issue. In principle, amnesty is reducing would-be laws to suggestions, and I can't think of anything more dangerous in a post-9/11 America than having the rest of this world look at America and think that we're not serious about our borders.
And we've been here with Pastor Kerry Gordon of Sioux City with Cornerstone Outreach Center and all the efforts that they have there, and Reverend Larry Gordon also, and the family puts out a tremendous effort. I put in quickly a definition of amnesty, which is to pardon immigration lawbreakers and reward them with the objective of their crimes. You've been listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and I very much appreciate the service that you are to God, to the country, and to the community in the Siouxland area, Kerry, and I look forward to seeing you again when I get back in that area.
Thank you very much.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.